Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Jesse Bell and I will be filling in for Dinah Jansen this week. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, and it covers the installation of a new bulk water station in Sydenham, Ontario.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. In a message from South Frontenac Township, new bulk water station in Sydenham. Residents of South Frontenac Township can now access water at a new bulk water station in Sydenham. The station is located at 4252 Stagecoach Road and is a medium-scale fill station ideal for residents, businesses, and farmers who want potable water filled in containers typically of 1,000 liters or less. Users must set up an account and purchase a fob device and supply their own hose and fittings to use the station. The rate is $2.25 per cubic meter, 1,000 liters, taxes included. $25 preloaded fobs can be purchased at the township's offices located at 2490 Keeley Road during business hours. Troy Dunlop, Manager of Engineering and Capital Projects, states, quote, "We're very happy to be able to offer this service. We know there are many residents, businesses, and farmers who would like access to bulk potable water, whether it's for home or farm use. This new bulk water station will allow them to access safe potable water 7 days a week. The new bulk water filling station will also fill a critical need in times of emergencies and is another example of how the township is taking action to adapt to the impacts of climate change by making their community more resilient." For more information on how to set up an account or purchase a reloadable fob, see southfrontenac.net/bulkwater.
Thank you to Christina Laurie from CFRC 101.9 FM for that story. We begin our local news roundup with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about ongoing union negotiations at Queen's University. Unions at Queen's are considering coming together for future bargaining in an attempt to secure better deals across the board with the university. Leaders of several of the unions at Queen's held a joint public assembly on April 4th on Queen's campus for members to hear about how union leaders intend to approach the upcoming round of bargaining with the university. The unions hope to follow in the footsteps of their peers at the University of Toronto in coordinating bargaining to try and secure better wages on a campus-wide level. With about 5,000 members going back to the bargaining table this summer and fall across several unions, leaders say they're committed to members across all unions getting the same fair cost of living raise on a yearly basis. Kelly Orser, president of United Steelworkers Locals 2010 and 2010-1, says the current way of negotiating favors their employer, and that unifying further can help all members get a fair wage. While starting at different baselines, she says, everyone should see their wages increase at the same rate, enough to keep up with rising costs. Orser stated that the union is, quote, trying to shift the power to make it so that the COLA, COLA, or cost of living adjustment, is the COLA at Queen's regardless of job title. While coordinating negotiations, unions would also coordinate on strike action if it is deemed necessary. Given the sheer number of members who could be part of a strike, Orser said that this could be very impactful, but that members will need to be prepared to support a strike if they want this to work the way it's intended. Ultimately, Orser says the main reason for coming together is to standardize those COLA raises. She noted that unity has helped other university unions. While COLA raises are something that the unions definitely have in common in negotiation, Orser says they will also look to any other commonalities that could be grouped into these negotiations. In a statement released by Queen's, the university declared that it values the contributions of all its employees and that it shares in the desire to build and sustain a world-class university. Seven unions are expected to enter bargaining with Queen's before the end of the year. Thank you to Owen Fullerton from YGK News for that story. Next up, we have a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, on the new name for the Napanee Recreation Center. The Napanee Recreation Center, currently known as the Strathcona Paper Center, will be called Best and Bash Arena beginning September 1st, 2024. The winning rights bid and name were revealed at the Tuesday, April 9th meeting of the Council of the Town of Greater Napanee in a report prepared and presented by Ann Mannion, Manager of Community Economic Development and Community and Corporate Services. The report noted that one submission was received from Best Developments and Bash Developments that met the evaluation criteria. The companies plan to build several homes within Greater Napanee. Currently, 545 of these homes have received approval at Springside Meadows, a new condominium and family home development. The current naming rights agreement for the Strathcona Paper Center name will expire on August 31, 2024, after 20 years. In December 2023, a staff report was brought before Council for the Recreation Center naming rights agreement. Since the agreement approval, staff have hand-delivered the request for proposals to several local companies, posted on bids and tenders, posted on social media accounts, and contacted companies via phone and email. There was some discussion and concern amongst council members about the finer details of the new arena name, but the majority of council members expressed their support. Councillor Bill Martin stated that Best and Bash is a great name that Napanee's hockey teams can live up to. Deputy Mayor Brian Calver stated firmly that he thought the name was, quote, just fantastic. Deputy Mayor Calver also thanked the Strathcona Paper Company for their continued support of the community center and the municipality. The report noted that the financial offer submitted by Best and Bash Developments was for the minimum bid of $30,000 per year for a term of 10 years to be made in equal annual installments. This would be a total of $300,000 over a 10-year period. Best Developments has won several awards for its outstanding service and homes. Bash Developments Group Incorporated is a privately held company with substantial land holdings. It develops and operates an extensive portfolio of residential, retail, commercial, and income properties. Best and Bash have a vested interest in the development of housing in Napanee and Deseronto.
Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell from The Kingstonist for that story. Coming up next, we have the local journalism initiative reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island, Ted Evans, with a story on a new agreement between the Bath Pickleball Club and Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. The Bath Pickleball Club and Loyalist Township have entered into a new five-year agreement. The permit fee will be increased by 25% with a 5% capital improvement fee. The fees collected for capital improvement will be allocated to a reserve fund for future facility improvements. According to the report, the club had 243 members last year and is growing. This year, the seasonal fee will be increased to $1,375. This breaks down to 71 cents per court per hour. Recreation and Facilities Manager Carrie Lamb gives a background on the previous agreement.
Back in 2019, the club did contribute some funds to the renewed pickleball club or the renewed pickleball court. They did contribute $2,500 towards the net. In 2021, prior to that, the courts were always available on a first come, first served basis. There was no agreement in place. In 2021, an agreement was put in place with the club. This was the first time that there was a formalized agreement for scheduled use of the courts, and it was for 24 hours a week at $1,000 for the season with the club. In 2022, that agreement was basically it would be renewed on an annual basis at the agreement between the club and the township. In 2022, the club requested that the hours be reduced to 22 hours per week. Which the township did, and it remained at $1,000 per week, or per season, sorry. And in 2023, the hours remained the same, and it was increased to $1,100. In all of this, it's important to note that it's the township's responsibility for maintenance of the park and the facility. That includes utilities, the portable washroom, grass cutting, trimming, blowing of the courts, making sure they're fit for play, and general maintenance of the area. In 2023, the club had 243 members. A good example of some maintenance that we did in 2023, the township spent $4,700 on new windscreens for the fences. If you're familiar with pickleball, the ball's not very heavy, so it requires windscreens. We're also responsible for all of the signage that goes up that advertises the club's hours of when they use those courts.
The township is to keep the courts clean and in good repair for the duration of the agreement. Mayor Jim Hagedorn notes the increase of maintenance costs.
I knew that they did support the township with a donation in the past. That's been recognized, and they've got value for that, for helping us at that time. And so that's good that we've acknowledged that. But I think it's reasonable now that we do gradually bring it up to a reasonable rate for renting the park itself. Again, it goes back to it is a big investment, and maintenance alone, just maintaining them during the summer, that always keeps going up. So the ones that are getting the use of it, it only makes sense that does matches as well.
Lamb notes there's currently no consistent model in Ontario for how outdoor pickleball courts are charged and managed.
Across Ontario, there's a real inconsistency. We've talked a bit about membership model, rental hours, agreements. What is consistent is that across Ontario, there's an increased need for more courts. There's an increased need for infrastructure. The sport is growing, and more clubs are popping up and more members. 2 years ago, when I asked what the membership was of the club, it was somewhere around 180, and last year it was 243. So it is growing. It is going up.
Lamb notes how staff considered the affordability.
I can't anticipate what the miscellaneous fees are going to look like by 2030, but I also am very cognizant about what does it mean for a club by increasing fees at 25%, and what does it look like per hour for the rental of a pickleball court? Is 89 cents or $1.11 an hour affordable?
Lamb describes why they decided the 25% increase was manageable.
We feel that although it's 25%, that based on the size of the club and based on the number of courts and the number of players, four players per court, four courts per hour, that we feel that this increase is very doable and very affordable moving forward. We do feel that we do need to continue to reinvest in both the CIF as well as collection of fees from such a club back into the operating budget for the township.
Councillor Paul Proderick noted his support for the new agreement and the increase.
I think this is reasonable, and I know what people pay for pickleball in other centers, and $1.41 increase, that's less than a Tim Hortons coffee. So I think it's a reasonable request from the township, given you want to have some kind of long-term strategy in place so that the courts are always there and so on.
Councillor Carol Park shared her support for the new agreement.
I'm glad to see that these agreements are in place and that we are planning for the future. You know, one of the things that I see quite a bit when I come by there later at night when the courts have been used is the lights are still on. I can't imagine those lights are cheap to maintain. I'm glad to see that there is money coming back from the pickleball court.
The new rate equates to $40 per member a season. Parks comments on the new membership fee.
The $40 per season for somebody to contribute into a sport or into a hobby is pretty reasonable in my opinion.
Councillor Mike Buderick described why he thought the increase was fair.
$40 is very reasonable because I know the Kingston Indoor Club for a year is $1,000 for membership. So it's fantastic. I know ours is outdoor and only limited to 5 months, but that's a fantastic deal, and I'm glad we are doing what we're doing.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans from CJAI-FM for that story. Next, we have CJPE Prince Edward County Local Journalism Initiative reporter Brenda Little with a story about Wellington's Regional Water Supply Master Plan.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
There was definitely a buzz in the Highline Room at the Wellington and District Community Center last Thursday as residents from all over the county came to examine the newest edition of the Regional Water Supply Master Plan. It is no secret that many people are fearful of building the system before the development takes off. However, they were reassured by experts that 75% of total costs can be paid by the developers, but that the development charges can't be imposed after houses are built. Many taxpayers wonder why rush to spend so much money, and why not wait until the growth comes? Problem being, developers will not start until they know they have a proper water supply for their development. Speaking with a group of attendees, some said they were better informed about the plans and that they felt there was more clarification. One person stated that they felt relieved having their questions and concerns addressed by senior staff. Another group said it was a repeat of what has been said before and pointed out that the financing is based on 2022 figures and that the cost will undoubtedly be higher. Another person suggested getting financing from other sources and that the predicted population growth is overstated. Overall, the event was well attended and the senior staff was kept busy with questions from the attendees. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to the team of Craig Foster and Brenda Little from CJPE Prince Edward County for that story. Next, we have a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Coburg, Jeff Gard, about the annual Port Hope River Race.
I'm Jeff Gard from CFWN Northumberland 89.7 FM, and I had the chance to speak with Float Your Fanny Down the Ganny co-chair Barry Adamson. How are you doing, Barry?
I'm doing wonderful. It's a sunny day, looking for a rainstorm coming in, and so we're smiling away and saying, I'm inside, I don't care.
You'll be starting to watch the forecast for April the 13th, hey?
Already. Get this baloney out of its way before it comes to the weekend. Yeah, I looked off and it started to, said a little rain and a little that, and I thought, no, I don't care, it's going to change before we get there. Keep a positive attitude.
Well, considering the event's been going for about 40 years, I'm sure you've seen all sorts of weather over that time.
Certainly have. And we've been very lucky the last 10 or 12 years that I've been running it. We've had some really good weather and we've had to delay it a couple of times and move it because it's not so much the weather. It is the weather. If we have to cancel it and delay it if the ice is bad on the river. So if the river's frozen, you can't come down.
No, that would be tricky.
And at another time, we had a snowstorm, an ice storm. The river wasn't frozen, but the banks were. So it's too dangerous for people to be around the side of the river. We couldn't allow to run a race like that. So we delayed it a week, and everything went off fine.
Excellent. What is the worst weather you've had, though, when you've actually been able to do it, but do it in the worst weather?
Well, I would say it's not when I've been running it, when I was in the race. I've been there and the snow's been coming down and it's been coming down and, you know, you're just out there and snow all over the place and blowing and you're coming down the river. It's quite a thrill.
I guess so. For those that don't know, and most do, of course, but talk about how Float Your Fanny came to be.
Well, it all came from the big flood of 1980. So for those that don't know that Port Hope was devastated by the flood. It ripped out a lot of the guts of the town and bridges, and it really was a bad flood. And so that was 1980. So 1981, some of the local folks said, hey, we're not going to let this river destroy our lives. We're going to turn it into our friend. And they went up to Sylvan Glen area with anything they could find that floated, kayaks, canoes, boats, and tubes, and jumped in the river and said, we're going to float down. And so that was the start of it. It started and they floated down, and we've been doing it now for over 40 years. And the race has changed from a year to year. Sometime back in the beginning, the finish line used to be on Walton Street. They used to come out and drag their craft up and drag it down Walton Street. But those were the good days, because when they got to Walton Street, the winners would uncork champagne and drink champagne right on the street. Oh, my gosh. You think about that happening today?
Not likely.
Yeah, not likely. No, no, and it was good fun there.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
But it has changed and evolved, and now you know that we finish at the Barrett Street Bridge, Cavern Park there, and we stay away from the main street and not make, let have any backwards effect on the town, so we're there and people walk up and enjoy us.
What made you want, you said you were a competitor, a participant, what made you want to do it back in the day?
It was on the bucket list. It was, the funny thing was, it started with some of my younger ones, kids wanted to go in it. So when the kids go in it, so a couple of years, my brother-in-law and I were a support team for the kids, and we saw how much fun we had, and we said, the heck with this. Why should they have all the fun? So yeah. We started designing and building rafts, and I was part of the Port Britain Pops. So that we designed our raft. It went through two or three versions, but it was down the river. I think it was finally down the river about 15 times our craft and
oh, wow.
its latest designs. And it always was the oldest crew on the river. We had a fellow on there that was 80 some odd. Going down the river with us and just having a ball.
I can only imagine the amount of work some participants put into building their crafts in the past.
They are, and the designs on some of them through the years are amazing. Sorry. Amazing the amount of work they put into them and the thoughts they put in. The costumes, they add all the color to the event and the costumes and everything that they think of. And we've seen the big old satellite dishes come down, you know, the 6 feet across. Somebody sitting in those with some tubes on them and all kinds of different things that just blow you away, that somebody's imagination and
yeah.
the fun they have with it.
Absolutely, yeah, because you definitely need something that's going to hold up to get you through the course, right?
Yeah, so for those that don't know, when the canoes and kayaks come down, they're doing about 16 kilometers, and they go through quite a bit of shallow-type water up till they reach Sylvan Glen, and then they're into the river changes all the time. And so there's twists and turns and rapids and shallow water, and then a lot of it is, you know, a kilometer or two of deeper water where the river is flowing, but it's not flowing that fast. And so you have to paddle, because don't forget, this is a race, and the canoes and kayak guys, they're serious. They really are serious. And they'll be down that, Jeff, they'll go down that river in sometimes less than an hour. And it all depends on the water level, of course, but
yeah.
less than an hour. And so they're really working hard at it and really having a good time.
Thank you to Jeff Gard from CFWN Coburg for that story. Coming up next, the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. This is your Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. The beautiful sunny weather that started the week has been replaced by rain, as Thursday, April 18th, saw no shortage of showers. A high of 14 degrees. Overnight, it's going to drop down to 7 degrees with a 40% chance of precipitation. Moving now to Friday, April 19th, more rain in the forecast throughout the day with a daytime high of 12 degrees. Overnight, dropping down to 3 degrees with 30% chance of precipitation. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, April 20th, 10 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud and a 40% chance of precipitation, overnight dropping down to the minus range, minus 1. Sunny and bright on Sunday, April 21st, daytime high of 11 degrees, but once again dropping below 0 overnight with that minus 1 degree range. Monday, April 22nd, a beautiful, bright, sunny day, high of 13. That warm, bright weather will continue into Tuesday, April 23rd, daytime high of 14 degrees, and the following Wednesday, April 25th, 13 and sunny here in the city of Kingston. This concludes the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region, throwing it over to Christina Laurie from CFRC for the Community Concert and Events Calendar.
Have an event you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. On April 18th, participate in a Lurch painting workshop at 77 Princess Street on the second floor. Expand your creativity and explore scale in this large painting workshop guided by Sasha Jimenez-French. Embrace the opportunity to craft a large-scale painting tailored for your space, whether you're flying solo or collaborating with friends. All materials are provided, ensuring you have everything you need to bring your vision to life. Feel free to bring along your favorite snacks to fuel your creativity throughout the workshop. And for your convenience, paintings can be left to dry at the studio, ready to be picked up at a later date, allowing you to focus solely on the joy of creation. Remember to bring any reference materials or sources of inspiration for your piece. Additionally, if you have specific space in mind for your artwork, please bring a photo to help tailor your creation to perfection. Once again, this event is on April 18th at 6 p.m. at 77 Princess Street on the second floor. You can register at birdgirlarts.com. Also on April 18th at 8 p.m., be sure to visit Muziki to see Sarah Segal-Lazar live. Pull on your rhinestone boots and zip up your moto jacket, because the femme fatale of folk is coming to Kingston. Her performance at Muziki is part of her 401 Plus tour. Admission is by donation. If you're looking for some live music on April 19th, be sure to visit Chris Jackson live at Blue Martini. He'll be starting at 6:30 p.m. and playing until 9:30 p.m. You never know who will join Chris on stage, but be prepared to be entertained as he delivers some amazing rock and classic rock favorites. Come early to snag your seat and warm up for the show. This Saturday, April 20th at Slush Puppy Place is the second annual Kingston Beer and Taco Festival presented by Cowbell Brewing Company and in collaboration with Very Hot Sauce. The Beer and Taco Festival is a 19-plus event with cash only. The event takes place over the entire day in two sessions. If you don't like beer, there are plenty of non-beer options like cider or spirits. Session 1 will be from 1 to 5 p.m. and Session 2 will be from 5 to 10 p.m. on Saturday. You can buy tickets at Ticketmaster.ca under iHeartBeer. Finally, on April 21st, are you a trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, or any other non-cisgender person who wants a safer space to swim and to meet other students and the wider trans community members? Head over to the Athletics and Recreation Center at 283 Earl Street on April 21st at 2:30 p.m. for a solidarity swim. Swimmers will meet at the Arc Earl Street entrance at 2:20 p.m. This event is free and open to the wider Kingston community. For more information and to register, you can visit gogalesgo.com.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and event listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music, and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news.
Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
Your true, true friend loves you just as you are.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.